Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Row by Row Garden Show. We're live from Hoss Tools headquarters here in Norman Park, Georgia. I'm Travis.
I'm Greg.
And we're glad you're with us today. On today's show, we're going to talk about fertilizers, how much fertilizer to use, what kind of fertilizers you could or should be using, and the different devices you can use to administer those fertilizers. But first, we're going to have our little show and tell session that we have every week and do our little tool of the week segment and show you something we really like. So let's get into what we've got going on in our gardens right now. I just picked these this morning. These are some top bunch collards. And in my opinion, these are pretty much the best variety of collards out there to grow.
If you're going to grow and get the smaller leaves, which a lot of people like nowadays because the older collards, old Yates varieties and everything that we used to grow, had a big, lot bigger leaf and it matured later. This top bunch variety makes a lot more smaller leaves and that you can gather earlier and have a lot. They don't have as strong a taste as the old Yates variety. A lot of people are eating the collards nowadays with a smaller leaf on there. So I like them a lot better too. Not only do I like growing them, but I like eating them a lot better.
And these, now the seeds on these have been pretty hard to find the last couple of years. Whoever's the seed producer for these top bunch collards, there's been a few crop failures. So I had to dig pretty far to find a little bit of seed for these guys this year. But I really like these. They grow well, and you just crop them off like you do kale, and they'll just keep growing and growing. Now, these guys will probably bolt here in the next month or so, but we've been getting some really good harvest from these top bunch collards here.
Now, this is a F1 hybrid, so it is a hybrid. It's not an heirloom, and this is the variety. If you go to the grocery store and buy a collard, 9 times out of 10, this is going to be the variety you buy there. It's the most popular one out there right now, top bunch.
So we've got those collards, and we've also got some beets still growing. Now, this is a red variety. I can't remember if this is Detroit Red or Red Ace, but this is the red variety I've been growing this year. And I've been letting them get a little bigger than this before I pull them. We've got some nice greens on these right here. Now, I've got these planted on kind of the edge of my garden, and I didn't put drip on them. I've just been hand watering them. But the heat's been really getting to these guys, and especially the gold ones I have planted. I just almost hadn't been able to keep enough water on them. Thankfully, we've had a little rain the last few days that's helped them out, but I think it's getting close to the end of the beet window, but I believe we're going to be able to squeeze these in here towards the tail end of it.
Actually, I think you have. Some people eat the tops of these. I've never tried the tops of beets. Of course, I'm kind of new to beets this year, but a lot of people eat the tops. Might be something I try.
Yeah, they're good raw. You can put them in a salad, and it's almost identical to Swiss chard because beets and chard are very closely related. So cooking the leaves, they taste a lot like Swiss chard leaves. So, you know, you can eat the whole plant almost, which is really nice.
We're on our second crop of squash in a garden. We've already had one plant come through and harvest it and start on our second crop of squash. We got zucchini, we got golden dawn, which if you've never tried it, it is a yellow zucchini. We got golden dawn, we got some gentries, which is the regular yellow squash coming along, and they're doing really good. We also got corn tasseling out, sweet corn tasseling out. Now, one thing I do want to say about squash is the last few days, for the last week here, we've had a weather pattern come in. We've had a lot of rain. 1, 2, 3 times a day we've been getting these showers, and it's really caused a lot of havoc in our garden, and it's been a concern to me with the powdery mildew and the downy mildew on these squash and watermelons and things like that. So we've been having to keep a lot of disease pressure out there. We've had a lot of disease pressure, and we've been spraying a lot with some fungicides. Been using some stuff for powdery mildew and downy mildew, which is the bicarb is the one I use for that. And even if I get a little window out there, I run out there and spray it, because with these high humidity days, we know we're going to have a lot of disease pressure. So we've been fighting that with squash. I got some winter squash that I've really been concerned about. And just every time you go out there and you spray them for that, it seems like an hour or two later you get a rain. But that's all you can do in these type of situations. So with these weather patterns like we have had, when you know that they're coming in, you're going to have rain, you're going to have high humidity, you're going to have cloudy days, you're going to have days with prolonged wetness on those leaves, prepare yourself that you're going to have some disease problems and get up there ahead of it and spray them with some of these fungicides, and that'll help you a lot because it's going to happen. And go ahead and mark it down somewhere. You'll make a better garden in a dry year than you will a wet year. Taters need to be dug now. It's just too wet to dig them. So we're fighting this weather pattern. I hope it straightens up pretty quick so we can make a good garden.
Right. And on next week's show, we're going to dig into the squash topic a little more and kind of show you some of these varieties we've been planting that we really like to eat. And, you know, kind of breaking away from just the traditional crookneck or yellow squash that most people grow, show you some stuff that you might want to try in your garden. My corn, as you can see in this picture right here, my corn, I've got silks, tassels, just really pretty looking sweet corn. Really happy with the way it's grown this year. And personally, I think it is a direct result of having that clover and then that chicken tractor out there grazing that clover. I think
it appears to me to be the corn crop, the sweet corn crop, seems to be about a week to 2 weeks earlier this year than what it has been in the past.
So adding those nutrients to the soil, that clover, that nitrogen fixation, and then having that chicken manure on top of it seemed to really help the corn. It all kind of tasseled out evenly. The silks came in at the right time, and we've even had a little rain and wind these last few days, which is going to help get that pollen from that tassel down to that silk, get good pollination, and get some really good full ears on our sweet corn.
I planted the ambrosia this year, which I planted one time last year in a test garden that we've got, but I hadn't planted ambrosia in several years. It really turned out good last year, so I got ambrosia sweet corn planted this year, and it's tasseling, so in a couple weeks we're going to have some corn to eat.
Yeah, hopefully we'll be able to show you guys some corn pretty soon. All right, so that's what's going on kind of in the garden this week. Let's talk about our tool of the week. This week we want to tell you about these guys right here. And these are called tub trugs. I'll pass a couple of those to him. And we've got several different sizes of these that we sell. We've even got some that are bigger than these. But these are made out of a kind of a flexible hard plastic, and we've got the colander where you can wash your vegetables off. We've got these shallow ones here,
and this is the smallest one we just got in a few days ago. This is a new size, isn't it?
This is a new size. We call that the mini shallow, and then we've got this small one here. So each size has its own color associated with it, and these things are incredible. They don't get brittle and crack. They're flexible. You can tote them with one hand. The small ones are really nice if you're going out to the garden just to pick a few things for supper. Like, oh, you're just going to go get a few squash, a few peppers, maybe an onion for supper. Some of these larger ones are really good for sorting and processing vegetables, washing them off. I like to just pick all my peppers at one time, put them in here, and then I'll sort them later. And these shallow tubs really work well for that.
Made in Spain from a UV-resistant material, so if they do sit outside, they're not going to get brittle, like Travis said. If you run over them or step on whatever, they just collapse and they just spring back. So these things are extremely popular. People love them. You know, heck, we've even washed the babies in them, water the dog in them, whatever you need to do. We've used them for several things.
Yeah, so if you want some harvesting containers that are going to last you forever, and really pay off, these tub trucks.
I gathered I dug a few taters and when I've got this a couple of days ago, and then I just washed them off and got most of the dirt off of them before I carried them inside, so that was really handy for me.
So check out those tub trucks. You can see them in on our website where all of our harvesting containers are, all the different sizes and colors we have. All right, so let's dig into the main segment this week where we want to talk about fertilizing your vegetable garden. Now, this is probably, since we started carrying fertilizers a year or so ago and some fertilizing equipment, probably one of the most frequently asked questions we get on our customer service lines, emails, stuff like that. How much fertilizer do I use? And there's no real concrete answer because this can get pretty complicated. If you do a little online research for it, you'll start to see a lot of terminology like this. PPM, which stands for parts per million. PPM, that term doesn't really mean a lot of things or mean anything to a lot of people because it parts of what per million of what. If you break it down, PPM really means milligrams per liter. So the milligrams of fertilizer per liter of water. But I don't really like to use that terminology. Like I said, it can get a little confusing there. We'll leave that to the chemist. So when we talk about fertilizer, we like to think about it in pounds per square foot.
Now, fertilizing can get really complicated, as Trav said. And Trav's got a background in biology, and I got a background in, let's just say I got a background, okay? Leave it at that. But what we want to try to do is explain this in a situation or in a context so it's easy to understand and you don't have to think a lot, because if you're like me, when I'm out there gardening, I don't want to have to think a lot, I just want to do it. So we want to give you good practical information on these fertilizers and of how you can do it quick, easy, and not make it complicated and make it work for you.
Okay, so let's use an example here. So let's think about our 2020, which Greg has here. This is blue fertilizer. So our 2020, that means it has 20% nitrogen, 20% phosphorus, and 20% potassium. Okay, so 20% of each. So that means in 1 pound of this, there are actually 0.2 pounds of nitrogen.
That's correct. Or this is a 10-pound bag. So in this 10-pound bag, you got 2 pounds or 2 units of actual nitrogen, 2 pounds of actual phosphorus, and 2 pounds of actual potassium. So to break it down there, we talk about the actual product as in pounds or as in units.
Right, so if I want to put 1 pound of nitrogen on my garden, I'm going to use 5 pounds of this. And just to give you a good rule of thumb, my garden is about 5,000 square feet, and I use about 3 pounds of this for that 5,000 square feet, and that's probably the upper limit of where you want to go.
Yeah, so let's talk about what this actually is for just a minute. This is the exact same product that they sold in big box stores for years called Miracle-Gro. And it's all blue. If you'll notice, it's blue there. The good thing about this, when you mix it up, it's blue, so you can see what you got there. But this is a great product that's been around for a long time. It's marketed under several different brands, such as Jax, Miracle-Gro, and several others out there. But most of the time, it is a 20-20-20. Sometimes they do have some different analysis on there. But this product right here works great. And all we did was buy it in bulk and repackage it in these 10-pound containers because we thought it should be more affordable than going to Walmart or the big box stores and buying a little bitty jar of it and paying a lot for it. So this is a lot more economical to buy these 10-pound bags right here. Now this product, what makes it so good is it has two different types of nitrogen in it. It has ammoniacal and nitrate nitrogen in there. So, and it's all soluble. So when you put this on that plant, it has two different forms of nitrogen or two different modes of actions, or it gives that plant two different types of nitrogen to feed. And there's nitrate nitrogen and the ammoniacal does different things to the plant. So that's the reason this product here has always worked great, and they actually named it well when they said Miracle-Gro years ago. But it works wonderful, and we're big proponents of this. Now, this is not organic fertilizer. This is a conventional fertilizer. But it is 100% water-soluble nitrogen, potassium, and phosphorus, or nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium.
Right, and since it's 20-20-20 equal parts of all three, it's what we call a complete fertilizer.
That's right. Yep. So your nitrogen is soluble. So your nitrogen can run through your plant. That's the reason your soil tests do not measure nitrogen, because nitrogen is soluble. It runs through, it'll leave out pretty quick. Your phosphorus, which is your middle number there, is not soluble. It's there. When you put it there, it's there until it's used up. The potassium, which is your last number there, is somewhat soluble, but it's not near as soluble as the nitrogen is. So your first number, your 20, is your nitrogen. Your last number, which is your potassium, both of those are soluble. Your middle one is not.
And when you inject this stuff right here, I mean, you can it don't take long to see some great results.
Oh yeah, it's used by home gardeners. It's used by big farmers. Everybody uses it because it works so well, and it's got its place. Now, when you're trying to hit crops such as corn, which takes a lot of nitrogen, what we do is we like to use this. We also like to supplement with a different type of nitrogen there to feed that plant. So you don't want to use this for all your fertilizer requirements. You need to use this particularly on corn some, and then you need to hit with some straight nitrogen. What we like to use there is Chilean nitrate. So what I'll do sometimes is I'll hit it with 20-20-20. The following week I'll hit with something like just some straight nitrogen, Chilean nitrate. A lot of people use ammonia nitrate, which does the same thing. Calcium nitrate is a nitrogen source. A lot of people like to use on potatoes, tomatoes, and peppers because it has that calcium in the nitrate as well.
Yeah, and just to go back to the amounts of fertilizers needed, just to be clear here, on granular fertilizer, slow release stuff, you're going to be able to use a lot more of that than when you're direct injecting this water soluble stuff. There's a lot more risk in burning with this water soluble stuff, especially direct injecting it. So you want to be careful not to use too much of this, whereas you've got a little more leeway if you're doing the granular side dressing because your release is going to be a lot slower.
Yeah, this product right here is meant for what we call spoon feeding, which is hitting it once a week, once every 10 days. And we get the best results out of doing this spoon feeding method where we get a little bit at a time. If you've seen these wonderful plants that the commercial guys grow in the greenhouse, the way they get those nice, full-looking plants is by spoon feeding. They give that plant just a little bit every week to keep it going. And that works better than hitting with a granular product two or three times, because when you're doing that, you're giving it a surge of that fertilizer, and it doesn't have an even feeding like you do when you start spoon feeding with some of these water-soluble fertilizers.
So that's a conventional fertilizer, and we talked about one organic fertilizer with the Chilean nitrate. There's several other organic fertilizers out there. A lot of people use the fish emulsion, the guano stuff. We actually carry guano solution here. Some people use blood meal, bone meal, malorganite, and then you've got your compost that people use. But with the organic fertilizers, you should just have the expectation that the plant's reaction to the fertilizer is going to be a little slower.
Yeah, it has to convert those nitrates and those organic fertilizers over, and it takes a little longer process than it does for some of these, with the exception of the Chilean nitrate. That Chilean nitrate is 15% nitrogen, and it's water soluble, and it's quick as well. And it's the only one out there that I know that's an organic fertilizer that is quick.
So I like to use the organic stuff, you know, compost. I've used malorganite before. I kind of like to use that as a pre-planting soil amendment. And then once my plants get established, I want to hit them with that quick stuff.
Actually, you used some chicken manure this year.
Yeah, I've got my buddy that's got a chicken farm, and they scrape the floors of those chicken houses, and it's chicken manure and peanut holes. Mm-hmm. And man, it's really been working great.
Got to be careful with it. Now, you can burn your stuff up, that chicken manure, because it's fairly hot. You want to do it, if you're using that, you want to put it out probably 3 to 4 weeks before you plant. Be careful not to overdo it. You can always come back and add some more, but you can burn it up, some of that chicken manure.
Yeah, I've been sure to put it in and kind of use the wheel hoe to work it in before I plant, to give it a little time to kind of lose some of its heat.
Yep. So we've talked about some of this stuff. Now let's give them some practical advice of how to actually fertilize.
All right. So we've got three different main ways, maybe four, that you can apply this fertilizer. And some of these, we have some devices that can really help you. Some of it, you might end up just doing.
And we actually got a couple of tricks we're going to share with you.
All right. So the first way, probably the most popular way people fertilize, is through side dressing. And so side dressing just means taking a granular fertilizer like you see here, or like our Chilean nitrate, and just going down kind of not on top of the plant, but right beside the plant. And usually you'll throw dirt over the top of it. Some people even put this down while they're planting or before they're planting in a little furrow, so it's there for the plant when it starts.
So this is a pint jar right here, and if I've got a fertilizer in there such as this, which is a 10-10-10 analysis, this pint jar holds 1 pound. Now my fertilizer requirements on sweet corn and tomatoes and pepper is around 150 units per acre. Well, I've broken that down for you and give you an idea of what you would do on a 10 by 10 area. So let's use a 10 by 10 area here. And if I had sweet corn on that 10 by 10 area, 3 jars of this per growing season would be your nitrogen requirements for that 10 by 10 area. That is for tomatoes and corn and pepper as well. So if you was using 20-20-20, you'd have to cut that in half. But 3 pint jars of 10-10-10 is going to give you the right amount of nitrogen for that growing season. Now, I would split that up into at least 3 different applications. That gives you an idea of how much fertilizer you should put on a particular spot. Now, you do the math. If your area, if you're growing your corn's bigger than 10 by 10, if it's 100 by 100, whatever, you can still use the same formula. 3 pint jars per 10 by 10 area per growing season.
So if that was 20-20-20, it'd be 1.5.
1.5, exactly. Yep.
All right. So side dressing, a lot of people do side dressing. There's some higher level equipment out there to do that with, but most home gardeners we know just kind of put it in a cup and sprinkle it by hand. Now, the way we do most of our fertilizing now is through injection. And we, you know, we're blue in the face about how awesome drip irrigation is. And if you've got drip irrigation, you should definitely consider coupling that with one of these easy flow fertilizer injectors. So we've got this tank right here is solid, really thick. And the way it works is you've got a coupling you hook up on your faucet, between your faucet and your water hose. And that has a line coming in here. So it's going to be pumping water in and then pumping water and fertilizer out. So when you set this thing up, you basically dissolve the appropriate amount of fertilizer in here,
yep,
fill it up with water, and then this is going to shoot water in here, and then shoot water and fertilizer out through your water system into your drip system, whatever. You could use this with an overhead system, but it would be a little bit of a waste because you'd be fertilizing middles, rows, and stuff like that. So it's really, really effective with a drip system. I'm on my 4th year now using one, and,
yep,
and I can go out, I get home from work, I can go out there and in less than 10 minutes have this thing up and running, my fertilizer to my garden. It's quick, easy to set up, and we really like it.
So one of the common questions we get, Trav, and I'm going to let you answer this, is how much fertilizer do I put in my tank?
So for my garden, which is 5,000 square feet, I put about 3 pounds of that in there.
3 pounds of this in there. Now, how do you measure out 3 pounds?
3 pounds? Well, I'll say this. I know I use about a third of this bag every time.
Okay.
Because usually after 3 fertilizations, I'm done with a 10-pound bag. So.
Yep. Now, it will dissolve better if you're close to warm water. When you put this in there, if you got some warm or hot water to put in there, it will dissolve better in warmer water. So I do that if I can. If you can't do it, it'll still work, but it just dissolves better. It'll be a little bit quicker. You have to fill your tank all the way up with water, with liquid, before it starts working. So it has to be completely full. After we put a fertilizer in there and we dissolve it, fill it all the way up, then you can start seeing the blue come out the clear hose area, and you know you're getting fertilizer out then.
All right, so that's the preferred way we do it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, you know, maybe you just got a small garden and you don't want to get into all that. You just want to fertilize your garden. But you want to use this Warrior Soluble 20-20-20. Now, this is a way you can do it with limited resources if you got a small garden. So I can put this right here. So, this is my 2-gallon sprayer that I have used in my garden for a couple of years. You can tell I've stepped on the one and other things. So what I will do is I will mix me 4 ounces, which is about 1/2 cup of this, in my sprayer. And I will take the tip of my sprayer off. And that way it doesn't throw a fan, but it throws a straight stream out there. I will take this tip off And I will shake it up good, mix it up good. 1 cup, about 1.5 gallons of water. And I'll run down next to my root system with this wand, and I will side dress my plants with this sprayer right here, right next to the root system. I do this every 7 days. So it'll do the same thing. It'll pop along. It takes you a little bit more time. And I wouldn't recommend this if you had a large garden because it can't get time consuming. But if you got a little bitty garden and you just want to give it a pop, this is an ideal way to do it. 1 cup, 1.5 gallons of water. Run that stream right next to the root system. Try not to get any on the foliage if you can because you'll likely get a little bit of burn. Try to keep it on the root system. Run down through there and you'll see some pretty dramatic results. Do it every 7 days.
Right. So it's great. Small garden, something quick. You know, you got a large garden, that's going to take you a long time. You're going to have to keep filling up the tank. So keep in mind the scale here and the appropriate piece of equipment for your scale.
And even if you've got a big garden and you got one plant that you need to hit, and you can tell you need to hit it with some fertilizer, and you don't want to go to the trouble of mixing everything up, just do it in that sprayer there and hit that, and you're done with it.
All right. So hopefully some great information for you there as far as fertilizers go, how much, what to use, when to use it, and the equipment to use it. So now we're getting towards the end of the show and we want to answer a few of your questions from last week. As always, if you have questions, put those in the comments below and we'll select a few of those every week to answer. If we do answer your question on the show, make sure you send us an email to custserve@hosstools.com with your shipping address and we'll send you one of our Hoss koozies.
One of the highly coveted
Hoss koozies.
Yep.
So give us your questions. You'll have a chance to win a koozie. If we answer your questions, send us an email so we can send you that koozie. All right, so let's get into our first question, which comes from Nicole, who asked us a question on our YouTube channel. And Nicole wants to know, what's the best way to keep bean beetles off your beans? She says she usually has a problem with Mexican bean beetles, but having a problem with bean leaf beetles right now.
Mexican bean beetles right on her beans.
Right.
Okay. So, I hate to sound like a broken record, but the control here is the same way we talked about before. You got to keep your garden clean. After you get through and your beans are over with, make sure you get rid of them because these insects can overwinter in residue. So make sure you got a clean garden. And as you can see right here, those are what the eggs look like. Now, when you see these eggs underneath the leaf on this plant here, is when you need to start with some type of control. They're easy to kill when they're in this egg stage and they're coming out of this egg stage and the nymph stage. If they get to this adult stage that you see right here, you've got problems, and you're not going to be easy to solve these problems. So hit them early. You can use dish soap. You can use insecticide soap. You can use horticulture oil. You can use neem oil. You can use pyrethrin. Any of those, you know, what we call organic methods will kill this insect and disrupt that life cycle at this egg and this nymph stage. So hitting them early is the key there.
And if you can, try to tilt the wand up so you get as much, you know, you can't lay on the ground and spray them, obviously, but try to get as much on the underside of the leaf.
That egg is going to be, and then this nymph is going to be on the underside of the leaf. So with these organic controls, coverage is absolutely critical, that you get good coverage underneath it. It's actually a lot more critical to get that spray underneath the leaf than it is on top of the leaf. So make sure that you spray from the bottom up as much as you can and let that spray come up and cover that leaf.
All right, Nicole. So thanks for that question. Send us your address so we can get you that koozie in the mail.
Yep.
All right, our second question and our last question of the day is from YouTube as well. And Jason says, I've been having a garden in the same place my grandpa had his and wanting to get the soil healthier. Says he's in North Texas, already, you know, dug his taters and just didn't have a very good crop this year compared to what he's had in the past.
Yeah. Potatoes are of the nightshade family, which is the same as tomatoes. And the nightshades can harbor some disease if you plant them in the same place year after year. So, Jason, what I would tell you, if you can, to start a rotation where you're rotating, you're not planting nightshades in the same place every year. You may want to switch it up, plant a legume 1 year, or you may want to give that spot a rest for a couple of years and let it rest and then come back and move back in. But you need some type of rotation. Do not plant tomatoes, watermelons, potatoes in the same place every year. You're just setting yourself up for disease. Also, implement some cover crops in there when you're not growing something. That helps with, you know, to lessen the disease pressure. So the takeaway here is rotation, 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 and work in those cover crops when you can.
And I like to tell people, instead of having, say, your garden, your area you have for garden is 100 by 100, don't just make that one huge 100 by 100 plot. Break it up into small subplots, and it's way easier to manage and way easier to rotate. So if you've got these little, say, 20 by 25 by 25 subplots, you can say, okay, I'm going to plant all my nightshades here this year. This other plot, I'm going to plant all my squash here this year. And then I can rotate that around. Whereas if it's one big garden area, it's going to be hard to manage and control a rotation because you're just dealing with these long rows and you're going to have things stacked in beside each other more often than not.
Yeah, I do the exact same thing in my garden. I got the small plots. I make myself notes of what I planted there last year. And this year, early in the season, I start mapping out what I want to plant there for the rotation to make sure I'm not going to be planting the same thing in the same spot again. And it may be a point where you want to let an area rest a year. Just grow a cover crop out there and let it rest a year. That helps a lot too with disease pressure.
Yeah, and take, you know, you can either take notes in a notebook. I just like to take pictures of my garden on my phone.
Yeah.
And I can go back last year, say, okay, I remember I had this. So photos on your phone, you know, that you post to the Row by Row group.
Yeah.
Those are good pictures to have for records for future years.
Yep.
All right, so that's going to do it for us today. Thank you for watching, and we'll see you next week.
Yep, and get off that couch and get out there and get something done.